Hey there, birth nerd. You're listening to the Birth Worker Podcast. My name is Kylie Banks, and I am totally obsessed with birth and equally obsessed with business. And this is the show where I help women turn their passion for birth into a sustainable, profitable, and most importantly, impactful career. All right, let's get into it. Welcome back to the Birth Worker Podcast. You're listening to episode 111. Today on the show, I am having a conversation with Dr. Elliot Berlin. He is a prenatal chiropractor, childbirth educator, and he is the mastermind behind the Informed Pregnancy Project, which is a project. Essentially what it is it's a company that pulls together all different types of media. So podcasts, YouTube series, documentaries, online workshops, and they compiled it in almost like a Netflix, like specifically for pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, which is super cool. Again, that's called the Informed Pregnancy Project. Dr. Berlin also has the Informed Pregnancy Podcast, and I first heard about him because he worked on a project several years ago called Heads Up, and it was a short film all about breech, normalizing breech positioning, and it's actually a movie, a short film that we watched inside of my doula training program a couple years ago when the program started. So very cool to have a conversation with Dr. Berlin. We have a lot in common, and really like the meat of the episode that we're getting into today, besides hearing his story, of course, is really answering the question, should men be invited into the birth space? And the reason that I wanted to talk with him about this is that there were times in my life where I thought, like, no men should be invited to a birth space. Like, male doulas are so weird. Like, what even is this? And I remember my mom sent me, like, maybe an Instagram link of a doula who was a guy, a male doula. And I was like, no, very weird, not my thing. And she was like, really? Why? And I was like, nope, don't even want to have a conversation about that. That is so freaking weird. And I realized that just because it's not what I want for my birth doesn't mean that it's, you know, inherently bad for other people. And I realized that by me really sharing my opinion, it kind of takes away from letting other people, you know, make their own decisions for their own births. So super interesting conversation. I loved being open and honest with him about my thoughts and really seeing what he thought about it too. And if you want to check out Dr. Berlin, you can find all of the links in the show notes. Again, he's got the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. You can find him on Instagram. I'll put all those links below, but check it out. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, well, it goes back to when I was a kid, and I think I was 7 or 8 years old, walked into a building, saw them teaching CPR in the lobby of this Manhattan building, and I was mortified. I was like, what are they doing to that poor lady with no arms and no legs? And when they explained that you could use your body to be somebody else's heart and lungs until emergency care can arrive, advanced emergency care, that planted a seed for me. I want to be in healthcare. I want to help people in their times of need. And so I just really slowly migrated over the next few years through fascination and interest to taking classes, American Red Cross, American Heart Association. By the time I was a teenager, I was teaching some of those classes. When I was 17, I took an emergency medical technician class in New York State, and then I became an EMT when I was 18, working in ambulances and emergency rooms, partially doing volunteer work with a volunteer squad, and also working for, you know, income and during the day. And it continued to grow. I wanted to become the greatest, some sort of surgeon, doctor thing. And when I was 19, when I was in college studying pre-med, my father died suddenly, and partially from a medical mix-up. And it really knocked me back a little bit. I got kind of to realize how powerful advanced medicine is, drugs and surgery, for the good, and also how powerful they can be for the bad. And how much greater it would be if we could work with our bodies to avoid the need for advanced medical intervention like that. And I wanted to get more on that holistic side of working with the body. Still very much respect medicine, And I still work. I think my patients get the best care when we work together. But after I finished college, I took a year off, and I just started exploring modalities. What else is there in healthcare? Complementary healthcare, alternative healthcare, and I fell in love with the combination of chiropractic and massage together. I love the nervous system. I love how the musculoskeletal system kind of protects the nervous system, and how you can sort of when the body uses that system so heavily. And there are sometimes interruptions in its ability to either receive information about what's going on or send the appropriate help. And you can sort of help the body help itself, clear some of those blockages and help the body help itself. That is power. That's really powerful. And so I went to school separately for chiropractic and massage. My wife is a psychologist. So we moved from New York to Georgia for our grad school. And then what happened was, as we were finishing grad school, we thought, let's have a kid. And we followed the basic instructions, and there was no baby. And we kept trying, still no baby. And we ended up doing a few years of advanced fertility work, still no baby. And ultimately, they pretty much said, we don't know. We don't have any answers for you, but we also have no more things to try. You've exceeded everything we have with your gametes. So they recommended either adopting or to an egg adoption, but they didn't really know why. And in either case, we were kind of broke in a lot of different ways, physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationship-wise, financially, just everything. And it occurred to us we'd probably make really crappy parents at that point. And so we just took time to heal. We started to really work on our relationship again and rekindle our spark. We worked on our health. We worked on nutrition, meditation. That's when we started to do meditation, some Chinese medicine, but all like in moderate amounts and working through different pieces to fix different elements of our brokenness. And I would say somewhere about 9 months to a year later, we were moving. We were living in Nebraska at that time for my wife's internship. And also just to see what it would be like if there were two Jews in Nebraska at the same time, because that's pretty much what it felt like. And we moved to Los Angeles. And when we got to Los Angeles, we settled in and we started to think about, you know, okay, what's our path to parenthood? And we found out we were pregnant. And every 2 years, another baby came out. Then we couldn't turn it off. And thank God now we have four healthy kids. But when we opened our mind-body practice, it was for general health and wellness, but with an eye on helping to boost natural fertility, whatever natural fertility you have. And that became a program that gained traction. And in the first year, a couple of babies came through that program, and then it just snowballed, and there were babies everywhere. And when that happened, you know, we kind of, both of us sort of got moved along the process with our clients. Okay, now we want to see you for pregnancy. Now we're getting ready for birth. And now we just had the baby and we'd like to continue with some postnatal care. And I think it was the combination of chiropractic and massage that is super unique to receive them in one session like that. And it really afforded me a lot of time to really get to know my patients, my clients. Every session is at least 25, 30 minutes long, which is different than typical chiropractic. And by doing body work, you can really get a sense of where the body's doing great and where the body's struggling a little bit or a lot, and where the strengths and weaknesses are. And there's a lot of time for conversation. And on that journey, there's, you know, you start to realize people are processing a lot. There's some anxiousness, there's some excitement. Sometimes one is more dominant than the other. And just becoming part of those conversations and then starting to do research. Again, I come from a very medical background. And so the first time I heard one of my clients was going to do a home birth, I'm like, why? Like, do you not have insurance? Like, what's going on? Yeah,
why would you choose that?
Why would you choose that? And it wasn't a tree-hugging, priest-driving vegan hippie. It was like a normal person.
Yeah.
So, quote-unquote. So, and then what would happen is once in a while, clients, because I did body work with them all the way through their pregnancy, they'd be in early labor at home and say, hey, can you come, like, do a session with me? I'm in early labor and I'm just tense. It would be nice. And that kind of led to being invited sometimes to a birth to continue the work that I did all the way up until that moment. I don't think anybody really ever said, I don't feel comfortable giving birth to my baby without that big, hairy, Orthodox man Jew in the room. I think, yeah, they would have been fine to just have my hands and not the rest of me. But, you know, it was over time of going to births, being asked to go to birth, and being in a couple of interesting scenarios where I wasn't the most comfortable, especially as I started to be called to birth that weren't clients that I had worked with before. So a lot of back labor or, you know, and midwives would call and say, hey, would you come help us out? Can you get here? And then one in particular where they had been laboring for a long time. There was no doula. The midwife and midwife assistant were exhausted. And they just said, oh, they're in there. I went into the room and the guy was like, are you Berlin? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, I'm going to go get some smokes. And I never saw him again. And I was just alone with this woman knee deep in labor who I had never met before. And I walked over to her and I kind of, you know, I'm introducing myself. This is what I do. And she's sort of in that child's pose on the bed at a birth center. And I'm telling her what I plan to do and that I use a combination of massage and we might do some adjustments. And would that be okay? I'm trying to get like informed consent going. And sometimes, you know, you're on the phone and you're not sure if the other person's line cut out and you're just talking to yourself. That's what it felt like.
Okay.
I couldn't even see her face because she was kind of, and then at some point she just, I'm not going to do anything without consent. And at some point she just looks up and I remember she had like the greenest eyes and she looks into my eyes and she's throws up all over the place. And I'm like, okay, I haven't even been to this birth center before. I don't know where the sheets are. I don't know where anything is.
No.
I'm trying to help her get cleaned off. She does give me consent. Eventually, we get it together. And again, like the midwife's fast asleep. Don't want to wake her up if I don't have to. And once we got our groove together, labor started to pick up. And she, you know, she looked back and she's like, say something useful. I'm like, I don't know. I just rub things and crack stuff. And it was at that point I realized, like, if I'm going to keep going to births, I should have more tools in my tool belt to for me to be comfortable and for them to be comfortable. And it just, I don't know, the idea came in. Maybe I should do a doula training. And my wife did it too. We did it together, actually. And, you know, as part of the doula training, you're supposed to go be the doula for several people. And that's really what launched my doula phase of my career is I did it for three people. And more people were like, I want to, you know, body work the whole time I'm in labor.
Yeah.
And it just became this juggle eventually where I'm at the office all day and then at birth at nighttime and then back at the office. And then I burnt out, but and stopped doing on-call work.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I got into doula work. And that's how we got into pre- and postnatal care for our clinic. And it was just watching so many people go through the journey and have different experiences, especially watching sometimes people have very different experiences than they were planning for.
Yeah.
Or looking for things like, can you tell me who supports VBAC? I'm like, I don't know, is it dangerous? Why? Maybe that's why they don't support it. But then you do the research and realize that the obstetric risk is in line with lots of other obstetric risks that we take all the time. So why aren't they supporting it? And as I would do more and more research and investigating and digging and finding answers and reporting answers, You get the same questions over and over again, which led us to do a magazine, the Informed Pregnancy Guide, for several years, and then a blog, and then the podcast, and now, then two documentaries, and now a streaming service.
How did the documentaries come into this? Who was the film person out of you and your wife?
Neither one of us was a film person. The documentaries came about because it became clear that there was a story to tell. It really started with Breach. Mm-hmm. There were our doctors here still in Los Angeles who attend Breach Birth. And it just became, when I really got into the term Breach Trial, which for all intents and purposes ended the option for Breach Birth for most people in North America, it didn't sit well. And especially what didn't sit well was my clients who didn't really fit that mold. So like if they had two vaginal births and now they have a Frank Breach baby and they quite possibly are a much better candidate for vaginal delivery than cesarean, but there's nobody left to do it. Things like that. Or people who really, you know, struggled without having options and without really being told why they don't have options. Those were the stories I was dealing with on a regular basis in the office. And I just started to record their stories, but I had no idea what I was doing. I used like film students. I used people from Craigslist whenever I got an interview. In fact, we got a celebrity interview that was hard to work out, and I was so grateful that she did. And I didn't have a budget. I didn't have any know-how. I used film students to, I used somebody from Craigslist to film that interview. And later that night, he's like, I didn't have the audio on.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to go like tail between my legs, crawling back to her like, thanks so much for making that time today. It was great. Can we do it again tomorrow?
Yeah. It's always better the second time. It's always better the second time.
And it was this amazing patient of mine who had to deal with Breach, and her name's Mel Kennedy. She's a director, and she was, you know, I told her about the project, and she was gracious, and she said, "Let me see what you have." And she's like, "This is a disaster. They're all like shot in different film speeds, and you know, the angles are weird, and the shots are and." God bless her. She took the whole thing and made a quilt out of it, a beautiful quilt. And somebody else, a patient of mine who dealt with his wife had a breach issue, is a composer, and he composed music for it that really made it come together. And one of our clients, Sarah, who had a beautiful first baby at home breach birth, you know, invited us to come film her experience, and it's just a gorgeous experience. And we deliberately made it short, 34 minutes, so that people who are looking for a lot of information on a short timeline could get it. And that was our first film, Heads Up, The Disappearing Art of Vaginal Breach Delivery. And VBAC was just a natural consequence. I had another person come in, and her husband Rob Humphreys is a director and a kind of a brilliant cinematographer. That's a beautiful film. And it was just like, I put out a call. Hey, does anybody who's pregnant now who had a cesarean birth with their first, an unexpected cesarean with their first, would you come in and tell us about your story? We were just trying to see if there was a story to be told. And after interviewing these four women on camera, not only was there a story to be told, but the clock was ticking because they were all quite deep into their pregnancies. And so with no budget, no resources, really, we had to set up a lot of interviews and B-roll and plan things out and try to just get as much as we could beforehand, which wasn't everything we needed. And then somehow afterwards, piece back together the stuff that we missed from beforehand. We also had no idea how any of their births would turn out, but we were committed to using them no matter what. And that's a great film. I'm really proud of both of them. No, this one's just cinematography is beautiful on it, and it's called Trial of Labor. And then essentially what happened is our films, when they first came out, there was like a lot of excitement about them. There were screenings, there were premieres, a lot was happening. And then it was almost like when you strike a match and there's that big flare up and then it starts to burn out. And I reached out to other filmmakers in the space and I said, how do you keep the passion alive? How do you, you know, and what was really crushing me was feedback from Trial of Labor from women who said, wow, that's a powerful film. I wish I saw it before I had my baby. Mm-hmm. And that hurt because we made it so you could see it before you had your baby. And so I was like, how do you guys get your films out to people timely enough that it can have the impact that it's meant to? And the basic message back was everybody had the same struggle. There wasn't a platform where you can easily access and stream all these films. And so I made a platform, Informed Pregnancy Plus. And it's new-ish. We have about 20 films on there now. Some of the iconic films, like The Business of Being Born and Orgasmic Birth and Breast Milk and The Mama Sherpas. We have films about fertility. We have films about pregnancy loss. We have films about hyperemesis. We have films about bonding with your baby while they're still in utero. And then that film is just one category of several categories. There's health and wellness, mind and body. We have yoga. We have Baby by Simone workouts. We have belly dance for birth. And it's just the idea is, especially in areas where people live that, not like Los Angeles, where there's resources on every corner. For everybody to be able, anybody who has an internet access to be able to access these kind of resources easily and inexpensively. In fact, we made it so anybody can try it for free. And a lot of people do. And the feedback's been really good.
That's fantastic. The Netflix for pregnant people.
Yes, exactly.
That's fantastic.
And expanding, like birth is the bullseye in the middle of our target demographic, okay. But we're moving out from there in both directions. So prenatal, amazing, and postpartum, and then eventually we're just getting into fertility and parenting.
Oh, fantastic. When you look back and you look at all of the different things that you've done, which are incredibly different, like each of the big projects you've worked on in your life, completely different. We're talking film, we're talking EMT stuff, we're talking your practice. What would you say is one of the most impactful things that you've had the pleasure to work on in your career?
Marriage. Which we haven't even really talked about, but marriage and parenting. I mean, the biggest lessons I learned in life come from those relationships. In terms of projects, they're all, like you said, they're all so different. You learn incredible things as an emergency technician, especially when I was 19. I was like fearless and I was like Superman. Nothing could ever happen to me. You know, yeah. I was invincible.
Did you ever deal with an emergency birth experience on an ambulance?
We had an emergency birth experience in Israel, actually.
Oh my gosh.
When I volunteered for Magen David Adom.
Wow.
Just a woman, probably like her seventh kid, and she was trying to walk to the hospital and didn't quite make it all the way to the hospital. So we really were just, we were leaving the hospital from a very long night and a very difficult case. And we got flagged down and, you know, I didn't speak great Hebrew yet at that point. And the person, I don't know if it's still this way, this is many years ago, but the person in the ambulance who has the most experience, the paramedic, is also the driver, which is kind of unusual to me because they're just like shouting out things as they're driving ferociously to the hospital, you know, but you're the one implementing what they're telling you to do. But anyway, he put her on the stretcher and within minutes, the baby just came out. There was no time to even get to the hospital. Yeah. So that was an early introduction to birth work that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
New York City, also very strange. A woman who miscarried on a chiropractor's table.
Oh, interesting.
It was a weird chiropractor's table. Like, I didn't even really know too much about what, I was just learning what chiropractic is. But this was like in the back room of a some sort of audio showroom in the front. It was a weird, I'm not sure if there was a license involved or whatever. But yeah, she started bleeding heavily and we took her to the hospital and she miscarried. So those are the two things really birth-wise that I remember dealing with, or pregnancy related things. So we had an emergency where a pregnant woman tried to end her pregnancy by throwing herself down a flight of stairs. Mm. She got beat up pretty bad, but the baby was fine. Mm. So those are some of the emergency medical things. Then just, you know, every birth is like a snowflake. Like, to just, it's mm. such an honor and privilege to just be invited and be a fly on the wall. But like, there's never, I at the end of almost every birth, I'm like teary eyed, and thank God I don't wear mascara, because there was like, hey, Dr. B, come take a picture. I'm like, ah! You know, I don't know. I'm an emotional creature, but that journey, that no matter how it went and what was involved, it's always just such an incredible thing to be a part of, or to be witness to.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, you learn different things. And I love to learn from everybody who I'm around. That's it. Okay. So if I had to answer your question, I think the podcast really is the thing for me. We're almost at 400 episodes. And every single time I talk to somebody, whether it's an expert or someone who's sharing their birth story, anything, a celebrity, I learn something from everybody. Everybody, I can learn something from everybody, and every single episode I can go back and be like, wow, that impacted me, inspired me, taught me something. And I love doing the podcast for that reason.
That's so beautiful. So would it be right to assume that you've been doing the podcast for 5+ years at this
point? Oh yeah, over 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Before it was cool.
Podcaster. Yeah. OG. Have you ever dabbled into YouTube?
Not as a YouTuber. Yeah. You know, we put our podcast on YouTube, but yeah, not really making YouTube videos.
Yeah. I wanted to ask this question. When you were attending births, did you gravitate more towards home births, or did you attend births in all locations?
Everywhere. Home birth, birthing centers, hospital births, hotel birth.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You know, I thought we just bought 5 acres in outside of Greenville, South Carolina.
Ooh.
And like, we should throw up a couple little Airbnbs specifically for people, maybe in some states that have strict regulations for home birth, where people can come stay and give birth and just have a safe place to make their little nest.
That's so great. Airbnb birth.
Because the laws around here, North Carolina specifically, are not helpful for home
birth. For home birth? Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah, I thought Airbnb birth would be cool. And then also, cool. I had this idea, sort of jokingly, but sort of seriously, to take RVs and turn them into mobile birth centers.
Love it.
And, you know, when you're in labor, the midwife will come over and we have this RV that has everything you need in there and all the luxuries to support you. And if you wanted to, you could get in there and labor while we're driving to your backup location. And then if anything came up, we would just get out and we'll already be there. So, and then my name for that service is Ubirth.
Ubirth. I love it so much. That's very cute. Are these going to happen? Are these in your 5 to 10 year plan?
No, nothing.
Just fun ideas.
Yeah, hanging out with grandchildren isn't my 5 to 10 year plan. I don't have any. My kids aren't married, but I have 4 teenagers now.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
It's coming. I'm ready.
I feel a little bit embarrassed to say this, but I want to bring light to it. I remember it must have been just, honestly, 3 or 4 years ago, my mom had said something to me about, Kylie, would you ever hire a male doula? And I remember like writing it off so completely that I was just like, ha ha, no. And you know, the more my mom actually like argued with me about this, you know, don't you think that like there can be amazing men that support birth? And I just, you know, I think I was almost parroting something that I had heard some influencer say on social media of just birth is a woman's thing, men should not be there. And then I got to thinking that if I truly support autonomy, if I truly want the person who's giving birth to choose whatever she wants for her birth experience, who am I to have any opinion on who should be invited to the birth experience? It's so fair that I want one thing for my birth, but it is so unfair to just make a blanket statement of like, men don't belong at birth. And I'm actually excited to have this conversation because I know that there's going to be a lot of people in my audience who have a very strict and strong stance that men do not quote unquote belong in birth. And I was chatting with my team, with the team that helps me produce the podcast. And I was chatting about how all of us, and when I say us, I mean more like the natural crunchy moms, the home birth moms, the free birth moms. We want more Dr. Berlins. We want more Dr. Seuss. We want more Dr. Nathan Rileys. But do we really? Because if we're holding the stance of like men don't belong at birth, then do we really? You know what I mean? So I guess I'm just curious, did you ever feel the energy that your sex for some reason made you not welcome? Tell me your thoughts on this.
Well, look, I think the overwhelming majority of birth workers are female. And it's, in my mind, the more natural order of things and seemingly the way things always were, you know, back before we moved birth into the hospital, that women were generally surrounded by women in childbirth. And it's 100% true that having a male that's not your partner, especially, in a birth is going to be only take away from that birth experience for some people and perhaps for many people. And I would oftentimes when people say, hey, can you come to my birth and do body work? I'm like, let's think this through for a minute. Are you going to be comfortable? And you know, there's always, I always have just like any doula, really, you could tell when somebody's uncomfortable with you around them for whatever reason. Sometimes people think they're going to love touch during labor and then they're just too sensitive. They don't want to be touched. They don't want anybody around them. They just want to go into the bathroom and be alone and sit there for hours. And it's like, okay, I'm going to ask, but would you like me to just leave and give you some space? And then if you decide you want more support, then call back later, you know, no pressure at all. That can happen, I think, with anybody, but with people who are, and in my case, I think it's also a little different because we developed such a strong relationship during the pregnancy with visits every couple of weeks or weekly by the end for many people. You know, I think for some people, it really enhances their birth and they don't either. They don't see male or female. They see support that feels comforting to them physically or mentally comforting to them. Or they do see male and female, and they're choosing male. So I had a birth at a hospital right near here, and I was the doula, and her doctor is male, her OBGYN, and her husband was there. And at the time, there was one male labor and delivery nurse at this hospital that was assigned to her birth. And at one point, we're all around her, and I look at her, and I just realized it's all men. And she was having a boy. And I asked her, I said, do you want me to get, because I have colleagues that I work with. I said, do you want me to get one of my colleagues to come in here and bring some feminine energy for you? And she said, no. She said, I have never felt so feminine in my entire life, surrounded by all these men supporting me. And that's what she wanted. That's what made her feel great. So I get it. I get that it doesn't make sense for a lot of people. I don't know. You know, for me, it was even weird, you know, going to the first couple of births where I was asked to come to a birth, especially for someone who I didn't know being in there. So I get it. I get it on both sides. But I think at the end of the day, there are some people that a male birth supporter is going to be the right person for them, either because of factors that have nothing to do with gender or because of factors that do have to do with gender. And they want, I know there was a male doula in New York City who was very openly gay, and his clientele were mostly single moms who wanted male energy in the room that was a non-threatening male energy. And, he served that role for a lot of women. So that's, I wish I could say in short, that's my answer, but in long, that's my answer.
That's beautiful. No, I love it. I'm always going to remember the story of the woman saying, I've never felt so feminine in my life, because I can absolutely imagine I could put myself in her shoes, and, it feels fantastic. So thank you for sharing your perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to know, what does a week in the life of Dr. Berlin look like now? What do you do for work? What do you do for income? What do you do for fun? What do you do with your time?
I've been described many times as a workaholic, and I've struggled, especially in the past, I don't know, let's see, 6 or 7 years to find more work-life balance. What I do is I start seeing patients at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I usually don't finish seeing patients till 5 p.m. Wow. And I don't usually take breaks, no lunch, no anything. I just go. If someone comes late, I'll eat lunch while patients are changing or whatever. I'll grab a snack. I'm just patient paperwork. At nighttime, I work on the media. So we have a great little team that works on our blog. And our blog exploded this year, the Informed Pregnancy blog. The same little team works on the streaming, but streaming has a lot of elements to it because we are constantly licensing content, but we're also producing our own original content. And there's so many layers to that. And then I go home to the family and I meditate for 3 minutes in my driveway so that I can leave everything that just happened outside the house and try to come in and be really present with my wife and kids, but it's for a short period of time. And on weekends, I try really hard to leave the weekends free for family stuff. And for fun, fun for me is just anything I do with my kids. It whether it's active things or just chilling to a TV show, or one of the favorite things I do now with my 15-year-old is we order these STEM kits and build things together. But it doesn't matter. I mean, just being around them, it's the greatest. That's what fuels me to do everything else.
Yeah. Do you see any of them following in your footsteps?
So my youngest is now 13 years old. He's had a podcast for 3 years.
Stop. That's so cool.
His name is Hootie and he loves food. So he has a podcast called Hootie the Foodie.
I love it.
And he loves chiropractic, and he's always asking. He likes healthcare in general. He loves medicine. He's not grossed out by anything. And he's always like, Dad, how do I crack this? And how do I crack that? And I'm like, I can't tell you because I know you're going to go to school and do it to all your friends. But he loves it. So there's a possibility. My oldest daughter, who's 17, is just starting her senior year of high school, and she loves medicine, but she's easily grossed out. So I'm not sure where that's going to lead. And the other two, I think no interest.
Yeah. Does your wife still work with your practice?
Yeah. My wife, so she's a perinatal psychologist, so we work together. Her passion in life is helping people have a smoother transition to postpartum. She created a program called the Afterbirth Plan. A subtitle might be How to Still Like Your Partner After You Have a Baby Together.
Yeah, I love it. Very much needed.
And then she's also she's a self-trained chef, and she just came out with her first cookbook. It's a beautiful book called Plated. And they're crushing it on Amazon. People really love it. So she's starting to work on her second cookbook.
Very cool. I'm excited to follow along your children's journey and see if they pop into the entrepreneurial world. I have a feeling they might.
Time will tell. Then I'll send them your way for coaching.
Yeah. Hey, please do. Tell everyone where they can find you. Where's the best place to connect with you?
So to connect with me directly, I am interactive on Instagram at Dr. Berlin, DocTorBerlin. And all of our informed pregnancy media is at informedpregnancy.com.
Fantastic. And before we go, I have to tell you that for our doula training program, Birthworker Academy, we request /encourage/ make everybody go watch your film Heads Up.
Oh.
I remember when I finally connected the dots that was you. I was just so excited that I got a chance to meet you and talk to you today.
Thanks, Kylie. It's mutual.
Thank you for tuning in to the Birthworker podcast today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Dr. Berlin is really, really fun. I actually did the episode for his podcast on that same day, so we got to hang out with each other for a few hours, and it was really cool. Like I said, we have a lot in common. If you want to listen to his podcast, check him out. I'm going to put all those links in the show notes. And then, hey, I just want to let you know that if you are new here or if you haven't left a rating and review yet, now is the perfect time to do that. So wherever you're listening to this podcast, leave a rating and review, take a screenshot and upload the screenshot to birthworker.com/review. You'll also find that link in the show notes. And when you do that, we actually send little goodie bags to your mailbox, like actually in the mail, like a little goodie bag. So it's just a way that we can thank you for supporting the show. And that definitely is the best way to support the show. So whether you are brand new here and you've never heard this before, or if you're a longtime listener who keeps telling yourself, oh, I'm going to do that soon, I'm going to do that soon, please do it today. We just got a fresh order of goodies and stickers, and I'm ready for you. I am ready. So leave a rating or review, but don't forget to submit it so we can send you that little gift. And thank you so much for being here. I will see you guys right back here on Friday.